I'd like to introduce our panel tonight. So we're all from OSGRAV, which is the Center of Excellence for Gravitational Wave Discovery. And we have researchers at six universities who are all doing different kinds of research to help study, analyze gravitational waves. And tonight you'll learn a little bit about why we study them, why they're important, and hopefully you learn a little something on the way. So I'd like to introduce our panel. This is Lucy Strang from Melbourne Uni. We have Debatri Chattopadhyay from Swinburne University and Hannah Middleton from also from Melbourne Uni. So can we give our panel a warm welcome? All right, so I'm just going to let each of them try to describe in 1 to 2 sentences, no more, what they are studying or what they're researching. Lucy, you can start.
So what I study are short gamma ray bursts. So when we see ultramassive stars called neutron stars collide, they let out both light, which we can see with telescopes, and gravitational waves, which is what OSGRAV is devoted to. So what I spend my time doing is I think a lot about the physics and I build complicated mathematical models to try and predict what we would see from these events if we have the basic physics correct. And then when it's done, I get to take my model and compare it to data and find out if I'm going to get a Nobel Prize or if I just kind of sweep it under the rug and pretend I didn't do anything.
All right, and Debatri?
So I mainly study binary black holes. LIGO till now, it has mainly detected binary black holes and one neutron star merger. So I just take these massive binaries and model them in different kind of environments, like in a dense environment where they're undergoing a lot of dynamical interaction, and see if they're merging, if they're not merging, when they're merging, how they're merging, and predict the statistics, model them, and then say what LIGO and other gravitational wave interferometers are going to observe in future.
All right, and on to Hannah.
So I'm working on attempting to find gravitational waves from things like neutron stars themselves. So far we've seen things like black holes colliding with each other and neutron stars colliding with each other. But we also think that like the neutron stars themselves, which are spinning, can make gravitational waves too, called continuous gravitational waves. So I'm working on searching for those.
All right. So I've just got a couple quick questions just to look. So you can tell the audience a little bit more about yourself. So these should be, you know, just a few word answers. Debatri, who's your favorite scientist?
If it's in physics, of course, we'll have our Einstein and our Newton and the classical things. But the scientist that I've seen personally, it's my dad. He's a biologist, but he has always been kind of my role model and the eccentric scientist guy around home. So, yeah.
Okay, Hannah, I wrote this before I knew who else was going to be here tonight. Star Wars or Star Trek?
I'm going to say Star Trek.
It's okay, I think we're in the clear now. So, Lucy, dream trip, where would you go and what would you do?
Dream trip, that's a difficult one. Honestly, I would love to go and visit various sites around the ancient Roman Empire and have a look at some of the ruins there and how large that civilization was.
Nice. So I always like to try to mix in some of these questions just to find out a little bit more about the people behind the science, because obviously our panel, they're amazing scientists, but they're also very interesting people as well. And we will have time for questions, so partway through we'll take a little break if there's any questions, and so just don't hesitate to ask our panel. So I am going to start off with Lucy. So have you always wanted to study physics, or has this just been a happy accident to find yourself here?
This has been a very happy accident. So I know when I was in high school, I was struggling between whether I wanted to do science or law, and my teacher actually sat me down and talked to me about how I'm very good at science, but when it comes to law, I'm very literal-minded. And sometimes just going, but that's wrong, doesn't actually work out when you're meant to be putting a persuasive argument forward. So I went into science. I thought I was going to do biology. Twice I tried to do biology, and twice I ended up coming over to physics, just because the thing I love most is the maths and the really inspirational I do find looking at the stars and the history of the universe inspirational, and that's something that I don't get as much from other areas. So I've just ended up here through sheer luck. and I'm very happy about it.
I was going to say, it's a familiar story, but, you know, being in physics is a very happy accident for a lot of people. So Debatri, this kind of follows up on what I asked you earlier. So who are your role models, and how have they played a role in where you are today as a gravitational wave scientist?
Ooh. Okay, so as I talked about my dad before, but for the role models that I have never met, of course, Madame Curie was inspiring for most women in physics or science, because we, as physicists, we have this problem of not having enough women scientists, and we can't show them to the kids so that the girls get more inspired to do physics, and somehow there's a male bias, especially from where I come from, India. But yeah, always Madame Curie, reading her biography and how she did her work and everything in those days, I mean, it was just fascinating and fabulous, and that kind of gave me the confidence that, yeah, you can do it. It's nothing to do with being a girl or a man. So,
And Hannah, I'm going to go over to you next. So this subject of gravitational waves opens up an entire new way to study the universe, but it's really kind of hard to conceptualize. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there right now still wondering what a gravitational wave is. So when you explain what you do to others, what are your go-to analogies, and, you know, to ensure that we don't get eyes glazing over when we talk about gravitational waves?
So I think probably my favorite analogy is this thing with the sheet of fabric, and then kind of like having a trampoline stretched out, and you put something heavy in there, and it's changed the shape of space. And then if you move two things around, it kind of wobbles around the fabric a little bit. And it's, you can also think of it like throwing a stone into a pond or something like that. This wobbling around or rippling around is the gravitational waves moving out throughout the universe. So I think that's probably my favorite thing. And I guess also saying that gravitational waves are kind of like sound as well is a good analogy, because people say we've sort of looked at the universe in all its different forms of light, but now finally with this detection we're able to listen to the universe as well.
So, Debatri and Lucy, do you want to sort of share your favorite analogy for discussing gravitational waves, or your go-to description of gravitational waves for someone who may not know what they are?
Do you want to go first?
Unfortunately, I think Hannah's stolen my answer. I was going to say I really do love the one where you have the sheet stretched out. And I think we actually have a couple of those down in the old steam house or power pump house. I forget which it's called. But there's two down there where you can play around. You can put a heavy weight into the sheet and you can see how space-time bends. And honestly, I've yet to find a better analogy than that. If anyone has any suggestions, I'm very open to hear them.
I'll try to give it in a new way. So imagine you're in a dark room and you're blindfolded, so you can't see anything. But then there are two cars which are speeding very close to each other, and then they just crash. You can hear them, right? You can't see them. So it's kind of same with the binary black holes merging and emitting the gravitational waves. We can't see them, but we can hear or we can feel the vibration. We can't feel. The laser interferometers can, but something similar. Is that okay?
Great. Like that's that. A good one. I like that. So this is a very fast, you know, area of study that's made a lot of progress in the last number of years, and I imagine that it's going to continue that way. So what excites you most in the coming years about your research and why? So I just kind of, again, want to get a quick answer from all of you, because you all do slightly different research in gravitational waves. So what's the, you know, what are you most excited about, or what observation do you think we're going to see soon?
Well, for me, I'm most excited by the fact that we're now seeing both light and gravitational waves from the same event. That happened for the first time last year. We were absolutely ecstatic. And what I'm really hoping is we'll keep seeing these kinds of events so we can try and puzzle out what's happening. Because we have a vague idea, but the minute we try and interrogate it, some of our models break down. So I'm really excited to see what new data we get out and what we can tease out about the universe?
For me, since I'm mostly interested in black holes, I want to see more of them. And once we start detecting, once we start upgrading to better detectors, we'll be able to see more and more of them. We'll be able to localize them better, so we know where they're coming from. We'll be able to tell actually how long ago they merged. So we'll have this all spectrum of things, what happened in the early universe, what happened in the middle part of it, and things like that. So yeah, with better detectors and better sensitivity, we can see more, we can research more, so that's me.
So I think I would say it's sort of in the same way that the electromagnetic spectrum has so many frequencies of light and wavelengths of light, gravitational waves will be the same as well. So at the moment we've sort of looked in one part of this of spectrum of gravitational waves, but there's also much lower frequency gravitational waves which come from supermassive black holes. So things like when galaxies collide, the black holes in their centers should form a binary and emit gravitational waves too. And we should be able to see this using something called a pulsar timing array, which is looking for gravitational waves at much, much lower frequencies than LIGO can find. And to be able to find that, just to see the signal of galaxies colliding would be very cool.
All right, great. I did want to take a moment if anyone had a question, because, you know, I've got a whole sheet of them. So
I don't think I'm arrogant enough to say I know what's going to happen in the future, because I know even just in the short time I've spent in astronomy, we've detected and discovered things I never expected or hoped we'd see. I know I'm really excited about finding out more about dark matter. That's something that a lot of people put a lot of time into researching, and I'm really hopeful that at some point in the next decade or so, we'll actually start getting the data we need to verify people's life work.
So I'm just repeating the question. He just said, how do we know whether the two neutron stars are colliding or two black holes are colliding? They're pretty far away. And for the black holes, we can't see them in the EM spectrum. For the neutron stars, we can. So the answer is, there was this awesome guy, and he, around a century ago, gave us a theory called the General Theory of Relativity. Of course, it was Einstein, who had all these beautiful equations about the universe. And once we use those equations to plug in what happens when two black holes merge and what happens when two neutron stars merge, apparently the type of waveform that's going to happen is quite different. So if you throw two really heavy stones in a pond full of water, the way the ripples will dance is a little bit different if you just throw a tiny, smaller stone in it. So we actually know from these equations how exactly these waves would look like if it's a black hole or if it's a neutron star. And we get the waves, and then we do our back calculation to tell what is it. And of course, for the neutron star, you can also observe in the EM spectrum. For the black hole, you can't. So all information we have is just through the gravitational wave.
Oh, there we've got another question here.
Do gravitational waves bounce in the same way that sound waves bounce? And if so, what do they bounce off?
Do I go? Okay, awesome. That's another really good question. The good thing is that gravitational wave is really, so most things, if we are trying to look into distant past in the universe, sometimes we get things that are obscuring our view. Good part is that gravitational waves have really good permittivity, and it kind of goes through matter pretty well. Of course, the amplitude would die down a little bit, but not quite that much. So it's not interacting that much with matter in general. So yeah, we are pretty lucky in that sense.
All right. So we'll come back for some audience questions in a few more minutes. I did want to ask Lucy. So the theory of gravitational waves was just that until a relatively recent time ago. So what drew you to really undertake this, and this follows from your response earlier, what drew you to undertake a PhD in an area that Einstein thought was beyond our ability to detect?
So there are a few things that drove me to this area. Part of it was when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I put a lot of time into thinking about not just what questions that puzzled me, because if you put it as a big question of do you want to try and figure out something Einstein couldn't, then the answer is yes. But even apart from that, the kind of work that's involved, the kind of maths I do, the kinds of computer code I write, seemed like things that would really interest me. And it also helped that my PhD supervisor, when I spoke to him, was very encouraging and helped me figure out a lot of what I wanted out of a PhD, and I may not have gone into this area if I'd spoken to someone else. So a lot of the credit goes to him.
That's great. So Debatri, so what major physics questions do you think have the detection of gravitational waves helped us to answer? Like, what are the big ones?
Awesome. Firstly, that there are black holes. We have had a lot of indirect observations of them, but this is just the first direct on your face. Yes, there are black holes, and yes, they are merging. Second thing is that Einstein gave general theory of relativity like 100 years ago, as I said. A theory that's that old, proving itself correct again and again, it's just amazing and awesome. So these are the things that it has already answered, but if we can probe better, if we can build better detectors, we can get more answers.
All right. Great. And Hannah, I was going to follow up a little bit more about your specialty. So you said that you study rotating neutron stars and how they relate to gravitational waves. Can you sort of tell us a little bit more about how those two things fit together?
Oh, yeah. So if you imagine thinking about the binary things that have been observed so far, you've got some moving mass, and it's got some asymmetry to it. So these two things are orbiting around each other, and there's a bit of asymmetry there, which is what produces the gravitational waves. So if you think about a neutron star, which is just like an old dead star, really dense, that's rotating on its axis, you think, okay, that's perfectly symmetric. Why is that going to make gravitational waves? But we think that there might be like little mountains on the neutron stars or some little asymmetry in there. And because they're so massive and so dense, we think that that should be able to produce gravitational waves. So as it's spinning, the mountain going around the surface is going to make a long signal, which is just like a sine wave, like a wave like this. And hopefully we'll be able to pull that out of the data over sort of stretches of a long stretch of data, like a year's long worth of data, try and pull this signal out of there.
Yes. And this is just a shameless plug. If you do want to try to see what some of these rotating neutron stars look like in the planetarium foyer, we have them in virtual reality. And also you can put yourself in a green screen and embed yourself in some rotating neutron stars we call pulsars. So again, shameless plug for some of the great things that we have to help visualize this. And you know, I wanted to make sure I asked this question before we run out of time, because we have some younger members of our audience. What would you want to say to the younger members of our audience to encourage them to pursue STEM careers and to continue their, to see where they go?
So this is going to sound very counterintuitive, but I'd say honestly that sometimes it's hard. I'm saying that because you're absolutely going to run into a lot of people who go, this is so easy, this is the easiest thing I've ever done. This entire 12-page calculation was trivial, and you're an idiot for not getting it. And you'll meet those people. But there's something about realizing that, yes, it's hard, and yes, you can do it. Just because it's difficult doesn't mean you can't push through. And it's perfectly reasonable to find things okay, find things difficult. Everything has its difficult aspects. And it's worth it.
Great. And Debatri, what advice do you have for our young audience members?
Be curious. Be imaginative. Because the world out there, the world of science, it's so awesome. Like, as they say, fact is more cooler than fiction. There are things that we can't even imagine with our normal common sense and imagination. So it's just beautiful. And you can be a child every day. You'll just feel happy and that's it.
All right, and what about you, Hannah?
I think, like Lucy was saying, that, you know, sometimes it is quite difficult, and you do find people who just seem to breeze through very easily. But I think the main thing is to find something that you're interested in. So if something, it could be science or whatever, if you're really interested in that, then I think you should follow that. Follow that path that you're interested in. Like, I guess for me, I've just kind of done, okay, that sounds interesting, maybe I'll try that, maybe I'll try this. And there was no kind of I want to do gravitational waves from a young age or whatever. It's just sort of bounced around. And I think in a way it's okay not to have a plan. It's just to see how it goes in a way. So some people seem to just think, I'm going to do this, and then they do it. But I think it's okay just to bounce along a little bit.
Yeah. What happens when a quasar merges with a quasar?
So a quasar is something like, I forget this right, that you have a load of gas around a black hole in the center of a galaxy, and that gas is kind of falling onto the black hole. So if you've got two quasars that are going to come, like, merge together, that's your question, isn't it? So you imagine in two galaxies, and they've both got maybe quasars in the middle of them, and those galaxies all sort of like interact with each other, and the stars kind of move around each other. The likelihood is that none of those stars, or very few of them, actually collide, because there's a lot of empty space between the stars in galaxies. But the two black holes, the quasars, in the middle, will probably kind of sink to the centers of the galaxies, and they'll start orbiting around each other. And we think that that should make gravitational waves too, because they're like really massive things orbiting each other, just like what we've seen with the smaller black holes too.
So firstly, a comment, fantastic to see four women up on stage at a science event. It's very unusual, so well done. I'm very happy about that. My question is, the gravitational waves we've observed thus far have been truly astronomical events, like black holes, the most energy-intensive things in the universe running into each other, and we've needed incredibly precise instruments to find these sort of minute deflections in space-time. Is it feasible that this ever becomes a technology that's helpful for humans as a species to travel the universe or do something more than, you know, produce really cool papers?
Okay, so general theory of relativity didn't get a Nobel Prize. Einstein got it for photoelectric effect. But now we are useless without it, because GPS works with that. So I don't know whether this technology can be taken out and help to build something really cool, but I know for sure it's going to happen. Just that I don't know, because kind of my expertise lies in what happens and not on how things are getting detected, of course. But building something that sensitive, because when the first gravitational wave were detected, it changed the distance between Sydney and Melbourne by less than an atom. To detect something that sensitive, the amount of technology which we already have is pretty amazing. So yeah, of course, the future is something really cool.
Yeah, I was just going to say, on top of that, we know already a lot of the things we use to run our detectors are being repurposed for industry purposes. A lot of people in the mining and resources industry are very interested in ways you could detect minute variations in gravity, because that can help them hunt down resources. So in the long run, it's impossible to say, but in the short run, we are still getting benefits.
Yes, so I've heard of neutron stars in the form of pulsars have something called glitching, which is, I think, when they change their rotation rate quite rapidly. So is it possible through gravitational wave detection, maybe sometime in the future, that you could detect glitching off just rapidly spinning neutron stars that aren't necessarily pulsars?
That's interesting. We do have a project at the University of Melbourne where we're looking at the feasibility of detecting gravitational waves from glitching pulsars. So that's definitely on the radar. But at this point, that's still a very advanced project. So I think our current goal is just see if we can do that and then reassess what comes next.